Hannigan. Super one-handed, but Messi rebounded it.
Welcome in. It's Club and Country, the podcast of record for Nashville SC coverage from the two people who brought you that coverage in the respective disciplines longer than anyone else. Mixing up the elevator pitch accidentally there, Tim, but I'm Wes Foley.
And I'm Tim Sullivan, the proprietor of ClubCountryUSA.com. It was very uncomfortable for me that the wording was not right there, Wes.
I'm very
sorry. Hammer it out, bud.
I'm all discombobulated. A return to a familiar place does not necessarily mean a return to the correct lexicon. I am back home now. And by the way, thanks for tolerating everyone for the last 2.5 months, my dinky headphones that are not great on the road for podcasting. Back on the microphone now. And I'm sorry, folks, you're going to hear a little more of my voice, or at least hear it a little more loudly.
Yeah, it's something we'll have to live with. It's our cross to bear going forward,
indeed.
I guess.
It is indeed. Apple TV with the call of Messi's goal. He had a couple on the night. And Tim, another disappointing night for Nashville. Again, they weren't terrible. Again, they took a lead. Again, they conceded. But Miami always kind of felt like that match on the road that Nashville was going to lose. This was not one, I think, where they're looking back and saying, man, should have held on, should have gotten 3 points. I mean, they'll say that, but I think they can more justifiably say that about other matches in which they failed to do that. For me here, the bigger fault was not losing to Miami. It was not banking the points before that match, knowing that when Messi and Suarez are in the starting lineup and Busquets, it's always going to be a tough haul.
Yeah, I've pushed back a little bit on the idea that Miami is some sort of super club. They're an okay team that happens to have the best player who's ever played. And that's maybe in a typical situation, that's not the kiss of death for Nashville SC. The way Nashville has been playing so far this spring, I think you can look at it and say, going on the road against a team that is going to start a healthy enough Messi, that's really just not the situation that you expect Nashville to do something well. And it doesn't make it like super fun that that's the case or anything. But if you approach it with a realistic eye and in terms of what Nashville has looked like, in terms of what Miami has looked like when Messi has been on the field, yeah, this was not the game that you were to expect Nashville to get points out of.
The biggest sin is not allowing three to Messi in Miami. It was how that happened. I think on both sides, right? Bad back passes and keeper play that was not characteristic of what we know Elliot Panico to be. And we'll talk about that a little bit today. And then on the other end, missed chances. If you score a second, you probably might still need a third, but Nashville had a chance at that second and that third. Some great opportunities where they either didn't finish or made interesting decisions in one case from Hani Mukhtar. And, you know, again, when you do go to Miami, and I don't think they're a super team either, but they have super players who find their moments, you know they're going to find their moments, and you have to take yours. And once again, Nashville finds itself lacking in that area.
Well, obviously disappointed to be beat here, but I've got to say, I was very, very pleased with the way the guys went about their business. The first 20 minutes of the game, I think the players showed a hell of a lot of intensity, taking the lead, should have really extended that lead from Josh, the one that hit the crossbar. But to go in 2-1 down at the break, especially from a set piece again, was hugely disappointing. The reaction from the players at half-time I thought was fantastic. There were certainly some very good moments in that second period. And in the end, I think we let them off the hook a little bit with the penalty leading into those final exchanges, which was a tad unnecessary.
Since MLSsoccer.com has lost a lot of the advanced stats that we had in the past, I didn't do the full research on this, but it felt like from the point that the game was tied until that second goal came around, it felt like Nashville was possibly the better team. The problem is when you are playing the best player, I'm no exaggeration, the best player who has ever played this game, there's a really good chance that you have to build up a margin for error when you're in that situation. And Nashville was unable to do that.
So today, we're going to do a lot of looking forward because I think this is a chance for Nashville to really turn the page. And I would argue, Tim, this is the most important schedule stretch, these next five matches that Nashville has had yet so far this year. If all goes well, it won't be the most important by the end of the season because they will have put themselves into a better place. This is the chance to do that with four home matches and five. We're going to break it down and get you to our expected point totals for Nashville SC, plus a pair of moves for Nashville. They look small now, but they could be setting the stage for something bigger. And Nashville's waving goodbye to a player that I think we'd all thought could make an impact for this team. So we'll get into that and what all that signifies. And then we'll talk about the goalkeeper situation as, again, Elliot Panico, who's been great, I think, for the majority of the time he's played for Nashville, made some mistakes that we aren't used to seeing. To what degree can he be blamed for that? And is it a you know, again, like we often answer here, a larger cause for concern or just a couple of bad touches and a bad night? There was a historic moment related to his play. So we'll get into all that first, Tim. I promised this audience last week that when I got home, my first meal would be at ML Rose. And I'll be honest, I followed through on that promise. We had stopped in
usually,
Kentucky.
I'll be honest is not followed by something positive, Wes, but continue.
I'll be honest, and I was honest. Yeah, exactly. It's kind of, no offense, but your hair looks really nice today. Yeah, it's kind of a rare lead-in, I guess, for that. But yeah, we got home. Family was kind enough to have groceries waiting for us. And we thought, yeah, these groceries are going to be
these groceries.
They're going to be fine tomorrow. They're not going bad. And our family all went out to ML Rose Friday night, table for nine, and we got right in despite it being a crowded Friday night at ML Rose because they have the space for it. They have the flexibility to move some tables together. We sat on the patio, and it was wonderful, Tim, to be back within 5-6 hours of getting home to be at ML Rose enjoying a burger and a bearded Irish brew.
Yeah, that outdoor seating is crucial at times at ML Rose. Certainly the Charlotte Avenue location, which I presume is the one that you went to closer
yes.
to home there.
Yep.
I've actually never sat outside at the 8th Avenue location, obviously the one we talk about most on here. But I've heard nothing but extremely positive things. It looks cool as you look out the back of the restaurant.
It is.
From within it. But yeah, I think we talk a lot about the food. We talk a lot about the atmosphere. One of the things that we don't talk a ton about with the atmosphere is the fact that some of the atmosphere that you can experience is nice outside in nature when it's beautiful weather in Nashville. That's something that I would recommend people do. One of the first places that I took my dogs to dinner by myself, my wife was at work, was ML Rose on Charlotte.
Yep.
And
yep.
At that time, my older dog Mac chewed through his harness. I had to carry him to my house, and it was still very convenient to the nations. But yeah, so shout out to the outdoor seating at all the ML Rose locations that have it.
And there's a pet store nearby as well if you need to replace that leash. Beer Lyris Tap of the Week: the Tropical Mood Ring, a fruited IPA with pineapple, mango, and pink guava. Where will the mood take you? There's only one way to find out. Cast off your cares, head for a tropical fruity oasis. Tim, these IPAs that add just a bit of fruit are perfect when the weather starts getting warmer as it is, you know, now. And I think having pineapple, mango, and pink guava perfectly kind of accentuates the Citra and Mosaic hops in this 7%, so it's refreshing, but still packs just enough of a punch. This is kind of a very versatile. This is a number six beer that can become a number eight, right? It's got the strength behind it, but it's also got some creativity with it as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And one thing about beers like this is if you don't like an IPA, but you're somebody who likes a little fruit flavor, you're somebody who likes maybe even a sour, these are the sorts of beers that are kind of going to be a good gateway into this style of beer. And it's something that we have talked a lot about, but it's something that I think we should emphasize whenever we have the chance, is that Bearded Iris has the opportunity to kind of win you over to some styles of beer that you might not be a huge fan of. And this is definitely one that we expect to do that for people who may be on the fence about an IPA. I encourage you to give it a try.
Sylvan Supply Tap Room, again, very close to that ML Rose. We're, you know, thinking, planning a pub crawl coming up soon. But that tap room is an awesome place. Great ambiance, a very good place to have either a date, an outing with buddies, a good conversation, or just go have a beer and talk to strangers, which is also really fun sometimes. That's the recommendation. Now onto the tap of the week from a soccer standpoint. What you got?
Yeah, I'm unfortunately going to have to go with a negative tap of the week for Elliot Panico's ability to. I think the first one where he was unable to corral the ball was the probably the original sin of this game for Nashville, and it's something that the positive and the negative we have to point out every once in a while. But don't associate the Bearded Iris tap of the week with a negative. Just the unfortunate nature of how this game turned out lends itself to fewer opportunities for positive taps of the week.
Bearded Iris keeps it real, and so do we. I think there's no shame in that. Let's go to the early shout now. First things first, Tim, let's look forward a little bit. Roster moves for Nashville SC. What do they mean? Mackenzie Gaines heads to Houston for $75,000 in GAM. And then Nashville turns around and acquires an international slot over two seasons from Philadelphia for a combined $350,000 in general allocation money. So let's address the bigger question first here. Where's that GAM going to go? And what's going on? How's the international slot that is going to be used here? Not where's that GAM going to go? The GAM went to Philadelphia. Where's the international slot? How's that going to be used? And he asks, is it to bring someone like Wubens Passius or Forrester or Jago up from Huntsville? Or is Nashville targeting a summer signing? And Joel, I want to give you a little love to you. Echoed a similar theme on that. Tim, what do you think?
I would expect that it's more about an incoming signing. You look at the way this team has played, and when the team isn't playing well, they, to their credit, tend to be willing to make a move. I don't think Mike Jacobs, I don't think Gary Smith looks at a guy who is currently playing with Huntsville City and says that is the move that we need that can take the season to another level. And that is the sort of move that Nashville needs right now.
Right. Yeah, I think that, you know, we can always count on the possibility with a really good immigration law team that Schaffelberg or McNaughton ends up getting a green card sooner rather than later. I don't know that to be true, but I think that's possible. If that's the case,
I think the expectation is that at least one of them does by the summer window.
I think that's at least one of them. I've heard similar things, and I didn't want to speak out of line there. But yes, that's my expectation, too, based on what I've heard. If that's the case, you've got two to play with. And I think I would agree with you. Ajago, look, he looked great in CCL. He's not played in Huntsville for a while, if I'm correct on that. I think he's maybe been a little bit hobbled. And so I think that there's an opportunity there. But I think the big focus is a summer signing, who you might need to buy down, because I think Nashville has the GAM to do that, or the TAM if they need to use that. But it's also spending power for a move within the league. I think you're looking at maybe a number eight or a right back who maybe currently aren't in the right tactical situations with their clubs. Keep in mind the MLS transfer deadline is, what, today, tomorrow? So it may not be something immediate, but in the summer, you could either see a trade with a club who has a surplus at a given position, like they did with McNaughton, like they've done with Schaffelberg in the past, on loan at least. An international slot, of course, could open up as well by virtue of someone getting a green card. I see this, though, as a summer signing. I see this as a U22 initiative type of player, or I think more likely somebody who's a little more established, who comes in and can give Nashville what it needs at in midfield where it's not had what it needs. Or if Shaq Moore's absence is extended, then a right back who can do a job. The fact that they bought the slot for two seasons tells you, of course, this is not probably a rental. This is somebody they'd like to sign and make part of this group. And then Gaines clears that roster spot with that trade.
Yeah. And the interesting thing about that is we talk a lot about kind of the arbitrage that Mike Jacobs tends to do with these slots, and getting one for two seasons for $350,000 or at least a season and a half, more than a season and a half for $350,000 is a really good price. They've been going for like $225,000 for a single season lately. So Nashville has, as they often do, gotten the right price for it. It'll be interesting to see if it's a player coming from within the league, but requiring an international slot that has tended to be Nashville's bigger mechanism of acquiring new players. But when you do have that international slot, it takes a lot of the kind of difficulties of figuring out all these different moving pieces off the board. You can go out and say, whether it's somebody from within the league, whether it's somebody from outside the league, we now have everything available to us other than designated player spots to bring somebody in.
The line on Gaines, by the way, one goal in CCL against Mocha, one assist in Major League Soccer in his lone start. But he hadn't been used since coming on as a sub in that LAFC loss on March 24th. So as we look at the Gaines side of this equation, is it that the player just didn't deliver what Nashville needed? Is that the primary factor in your opinion? Is it they saw a chance to get some cash for a guy who wasn't playing a lot because he was never really expected to play a lot? Or is it just a casualty of Renda Leal getting healthy, that the man who kind of occupies that spot on a starting basis is coming in, he's going to get a chance to play a lot, and Gaines was just kind of the odd man out when they needed the roster slot?
Yeah, I think that is the closer likelihood. I think it's you look at needing some assets from around the league and saying, okay, where can we lighten the roster to acquire these assets with a healthy Randall Leal? It's not to say Gaines wasn't going to play at all, but I think it makes his playing time quite a bit less likely to come by, more difficult to come by. if you're trying to get rid of a player because you need the assets coming in, it's not because you want to get rid of the player, but you have to look at who you can do without, basically. And somebody that it has to be somebody that you can do without, and it has to be somebody that there is a market for because you need to get the assets in return. And I think that more so than the technical staff not seeing a future for Gaines is behind this one.
Randall is back. What a big boost for this club, potentially, and certainly for Randall, who we both have come to really respect and enjoy watching. His contract is up at the end of the season. So, Tim, this is a big moment for his career, and I think maybe a big couple of months, honestly, as the transfer window approaches and Nashville's evaluating its needs and his future. The club needs to get a lot out of him, especially with Tyler Boyd ailing, the attack not really clicking. He just played 5 minutes against Miami. 4 of 7 passing, 10 touches, 1 inside the opposing 18. Nothing of significance, nor would you expect that on a return and 5 minutes plus stoppage. But This is a massive opportunity for him. And it could, if it's the Randall we know, transform what this club is doing moving forward.
Yeah, and we've talked a lot about how he's different from some of the other wingers that Nashville has. And Gaines was one of the guys that he was different from. Gaines is a little bit more of a speed and beat guys on the dribble, on the edge sort of player, whereas Randall is somebody who has a little bit more technical ability in tight spaces, and somebody who's obviously very fond of the long shot, very willing to whip in the crosses. He, you know, he trusts his feet to deliver the ball hard and where he wants it. That's a bit different than what Nashville has had on the roster, whether that's from Jacob Scheffelberg, whether that's from McKenzie Gaines. This is a different style of play that it enables Nashville to play, and we'll see if that's exactly what they need. I think we've seen over the course of his, 5 years now? Yeah, four plus years now in Nashville, that Leal is not going to be somebody who is challenging for MVP honors, whether on the team or within the league. But he is somebody who is, I think, an upgrade at the position and a stylistic change at the position that gives you a curveball to kind of your fastball, so to speak.
I think it could be really big, especially, and I've mentioned this before, that Leal is like a really good 3-point shooter on a team. You know, when you can shoot from distance, you can open up the channels a little bit. And Leal loves to shoot the 20-yard banger and occasionally hit him. But even if he doesn't hit them, he's a threat to do so. And then it helps distribution and gives another pattern of play, particularly through the middle. Could be a really big return for Nashville. We said that before, though, and he didn't have a huge impact when he came in last year after his injury. So he's hoping, and Nashville is hoping for more in 2024. Revisiting the match of Miami just in one more vein here, a couple more, actually. 10 points now dropped from winning positions this season. Nashville scored early against Miami. I don't think we ever expected them to necessarily, you know, get a clean sheet in this one. But they do, of course, then concede the next three. And that means that in matches that Nashville SC has led first, it has allowed 10 goals after scoring that opening goal. Not something we know Nashville to be historically. And in those contests they've scored first, they're 1-2-2, the lone win coming against Charlotte, still the lone win this season. So here's the impact, Tim. Here's why that matters, of course. If Nashville had held all of its leads this season, look, high expectation, sure, but just let's say they had, they'd be in first place right now. They would have as many points as everybody except for Miami, but they would have beaten Miami, so they would then pass Miami. As it stands, they're not in first, they're in 14th. And once again, it's the hallmark of these Gary Smith teams, right? Holding leads. They, for 3.5 seasons, that was their MO. And now that's faltered yet again.
Yeah, it's a situation that, we answered a mailbag question about this. I don't remember if it was last week or 2 weeks ago, but it's not really one that Nashville has been in historically. I know fans can get a little bit upset about a wasted lead that turns into a draw or whatever the case may be. Historically, Nashville has been about even with league average in terms of giving up leads. This is atypical so far this year. The question becomes then, is that just who this team is now, or is it something that they can snap out of? They can do a little bit, whether that's building leads or holding them better. Obviously, we have seen a team that is very banged up at this early stage of the year that can give you a little bit of faith that maybe the situation improves or they'll be able to hold them better. But you can also look at them and say, man, if the mentality starts to slip a little bit and they kind of lose faith in the project, who knows? It could go even farther in the negative direction. So that's something that we'll have to keep an eye on. I would expect basically it improves slightly, but not improves to their historical level, just based on feelings, ball, and vibes. But we'll see what happens.
Well, especially with the schedule coming up, it's a chance to improve things and to really put the pedal down. And more on that in just a second. But first, a note of historical importance here. in the goalkeeper position, Tim. Saturday was the first time a Nashville SC keeper has ever been pulled from a match. The only other time the starter didn't finish was the red card for Joe Willis at LAFC earlier this year, and Panico came in then. But Elliot Panico, 45 minutes, pulled at halftime in favor of Joe Willis.
Wow, look at you, man, forgetting about late extra time subs in League's Cup last year. So Panico could do penalties.
League play, I will say. League play. You're exactly right. Thank you for flagging that. In league play, in a traditional setting, not an extra time situation.
And with Elliot, I just thought he was going through a very difficult time. I didn't want to put him under the spotlight in the second half. There were three or four moments with the ball at his feet that I think they were seeing as prime opportunities maybe to get a higher press. And it was causing some difficulties for the rest of the group. So, look, again, some wonderful work from Elliot. He was in the side because he deserved to. This is a blip. No more. It was a difficult 45 minutes for him. He actually made one or two excellent saves. But the work with his feet was off cue. It was creating some issues. And I felt it was the right move at this point. But that's not to detract from what he's done for us in the past.
Tim, we're both high on Elliot Panico. I think most of our listeners are. We love his raw shot-stopping ability. Tremendous in PKs. Of course, he took that starting job from Joe Willis in Leagues Cup last year and was the guy when he, you know, and even when he wasn't the guy, he was the guy for penalties. But this was not a good match for him. Uncle BZ says it well. He says, long-time listener, frequent contributor, we knew Elliot's distribution compared to Joe was questionable, but this performance seemed extremely bad. Was it the pressure of the bright lights of Fort Lauderdale versus Messi and friends, or do his numbers warrant the result? Was this a fluke? Was this just a bad night? Or is this a sign that maybe there's some concern with putting him back there on a full-time basis?
Yeah, I talked about mentality with the last question, so I don't want to veer too far away from feelings ball, but we have a lot of data on Elliot Panico, and I would expect that huge body of data we have proves to be correct in comparison to a one half sample size. So I would expect that it's not a recurring issue going forward, because it hasn't been thus far. He's not going to be the best keeper in the league, but I think he's not going to play as poorly as he did on Saturday night either.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think the qualities that he shows are sufficient to
also,
to say
also shout out to BZ for the bright lights of Fort Lauderdale.
They are dim. They're temporary.
And Hialeah dog tracks, baby.
That's it. I've actually been to a Hialeah, what do you call those shows? Competition, place,
game. I don't know.
I don't know what to even call that. I've been to one in the Fort Lauderdale area. Dania Beach, shout out. Yeah. All right. To broaden the conversation a bit, though, Thomas Porter asks, how do you evaluate a goalie independent of the defense around them? And how would you proportionally break down the goalie's value in saves versus possession? Possession's a tricky one to measure. I think saves, we can look at goals minus expected goals and get an idea of course, how they've performed as a shot stopper compared to how the numbers suggest they should have performed. And at this point, actually, Elliot Panico minus one. So he right now has faced a higher number of expected goals than he's allowed. So he's actually outperforming what he should have surrendered to this point, despite that frustrating Miami match.
Yeah, and American Soccer Analysis, I've been like frantically hunting for it this morning and couldn't find it. But I think they valued like 80% of what a keeper does as shot stopping. It's so much more important than anything else a goalkeeper can do. Obviously, there is a little bit of value to commanding your box, to passing, to the other things that a goalkeeper can do. Claiming crosses, I believe, is one of their metrics as well. But the overwhelming proportion of the value a keeper can provide or fail to provide is in shot stopping. And so it sucks when the guy passes it to the opponent and basically gives up an open net, as we saw on a couple of, or at least on one very notable occasion that did not result in a goal on Saturday night. But I think when you look at that, especially I didn't go back and look at Panico's numbers because I was looking for the pros piece that they wrote a couple years ago when Goalkeeper G Plus came out. But I think Panico's basically been average at the other stuff, so it's not that big of a deal. Again, this, we have a large body of data on a guy that says that Saturday night was most likely an aberration in the bright lights of Fort Lauderdale. maybe were the issue.
Yeah, there are a couple other stats here that we can talk about that I don't think are significant to this point in the season, with each keeper playing around 4 matches, give or take a few. Launch percentage is the percentage of long passes that don't include goal kicks. Elliot has actually launched about 10% more than Joe. So longer passes there. That means his completion percentage, unsurprisingly, is a bit lower of those launches. Well, actually, that's independent. The percentage of the launches is lower. The overall pass percentage for him also lower, which you might expect. So minor things that probably don't have a lot to tell us yet, though, just because we are, of course, so early into the season. Just throwing that out there as numbers that you can track, Thomas, if you're looking to do so. So next up, maybe an opportunity, Tim. After all this misery and frustration for Nashville, the next 5 matches are massive. And we start with San Jose on Sunday. Gold nuggets about them are bleak. I'm going to give you 4 numbers: 3, 25, 5, and 3. 3, the Quakes are last in MLS with just 3 points so far this year. They are 1-9-0. 25, they have the worst defense in MLS. They've conceded 25% more goals than the next closest club. Not great. 24 conceded in 10 matches. 5, they've lost all 5 road matches. And 3, they've scored nearly 2 goals per contest in those road matches, but they've given up almost 3 goals per match. Tim, the schedule finally kind to Nashville, but with that comes pressure. There really are no excuses Sunday. Even if you're depleted still and don't have everybody back, this has to be a win against a struggling San Jose team.
Yeah, it's a situation where if you're looking to get off of a fairly ignominious stretch of your schedule, this is the team that you want to do it against. There is no excuse for anything other than a win against San Jose, and that starts to feel really scary in terms of sending out the wrong vibes and jinxing things. But this is a team that has been so poor, especially defensively. We have not seen Nashville play to its typical defensive level, but what we have seen is a fair amount of scoring, including going back into the CONCACAF Champions League matches, including the one that saw Nashville give up a lead against Miami. But I think when you look at San Jose, you say, okay, maybe that lead could be 3 or 4 nothing before you give up a couple goals. It's just a team that can score but cannot stop anyone, and Nashville needs to take advantage of that if they want to be a serious team for the rest of this year.
It is Saturday. I think I inadvertently said Sunday earlier. Match is Saturday, 7:30 p.m. I had Arsenal on the brain. North London Derby is Sunday morning. But those two not on the same day. Before a quick mailbag, a glance at the upcoming schedule. And Tim, this is why I think it's the most important 5-game stretch for Nashville so far this season, and could end up being season defining for better or worse. 4 home matches coming up in the next 5. Those home matches, San Jose, Montreal, and Toronto are the first 3. In between that, you've got a road trip to Charlotte, who Nashville's already beaten. Charlotte just lost at home 3-0 to Minnesota. And it all caps off with a matinee rivalry showdown against Atlanta. The money stat here: the 4 opponents that Nashville will host in these next 4 home matches have a combined 3 wins so far on the road in 19 road contests. Now, road performances in this league are always going to be below average. You wouldn't expect 10 or 11 out of 19, but 3, that's pretty rough. And so I thought maybe we could play the points game together. This is how Gary Smith looks at matches, right? He doesn't look at one match independent of every other one. He looks at chunks of games. And I would guarantee you, almost without talking to him, that he's got these 5 circled as the next 5 in that list. The typical incentive has been you hit a certain points mark, you get an extra day of training off. You hit a really good points mark, then you get 2 days of training off. So I'll play that game. I've got the highest reasonable expectation of what Nashville can achieve in these next 5, and the lowest tolerable expectation. The other way to read that: if the lowest tolerable happens, Nashville SC gets a day off. Highest reasonable, they get 2. I think I'll start here, and then I want to see where your differences lie. I think Nashville needs to win 3 of these and draw another, and 1 loss is tolerable, probably at Charlotte or hosting Atlanta. So the highest reasonable points, I've got 11 out of 15. That would mean a win against San Jose, a win against Montreal, and a win against Toronto, followed by something, Charlotte and Atlanta. That does not add up to 11 as I look through
Yeah, that would
that.
be 2 draws there.
So I've got win, yeah, win, win, draw, win. Okay. San Jose, I'll just tell you what I think should happen in each match, and you guys can do the math. I think they have to beat San Jose. I think they have to beat Toronto at home. That's a Toronto team that's not great. That's 6 points. You got the scoreboard up. Thank you, Tim. Math was not my strong suit. Montreal is a win or a draw. I think you could see two sides to that coin there. Charlotte, a draw or a loss. Atlanta, a draw or a loss. Yeah.
So that'd be 9.5 the way you
Okay.
said it.
All right. My breakdown is a bit independent of my math,
I
but
think 10.5, sorry, the way you said it.
you got to beat San Jose, you got to beat Toronto. You need I think you can lose to either Charlotte or Atlanta, but not to both. That's where I'll stop and get out of the way.
I think you can't lose a match here. I think you need at least a draw in all five of these matches, not because that's what you would have expected going into the season, but because you've lost your margin for error, you need to build it back up. I think you obviously would like to see three wins, but I would say least tolerable would be three wins. Sorry, yeah, three wins and two draws is in the middle there. I think you could go four wins and a draw. I think two wins, any losses, it really starts to get iffy there.
I've got 8 points as the lowest tolerable, and that's lowest. Maybe you don't get a day off for that. It's two wins, two draws out of
I
this
like that.
stretch, and then one loss. But either way, it's huge. And just a little mathematical context later as to where that would put Nashville SC in the standings when we got a really good question about what a reasonable goal would look like this season. I think this is the chance to get back to what those goals could look like for Nashville SC. But first, Tim, back to your comment about the outdoor spaces at ML Rose. That was something I wanted to echo, and I waited till now to do it. But we had a guy, we had a kid, 3-year-old kid, right? My son, who had been on the road for 16 hours over 2 days, and he needed to run around. He didn't need to go to some stodgy restaurant where he had to sit in the seat for an hour. We got there, we ordered his food, it came quickly, but while we waited, he ran around the golf course, the putting green, some other kids at that ML Rose outdoor space. If you're bringing kids to a restaurant, what a great place to do that, where you can let them be kids and run around, but still you can bring them back to the table with the promise of a meal you know they're gonna like.
Yeah, and it's fenced in so your kids can't run out to Charlotte
Key point.
Avenue.
Key point. Yes.
It's we talk a lot about how it has great food and great beer, which seem to be some pretty adult-oriented items. Certainly the beer, but it is a place that you can bring your family. It's a place that you can go watch a sporting match, and there's not going to be a bunch of rowdy drunkards. There's going to be people who are enjoying the game, having some beer for sure, but you can still feel comfortable bringing your family to the restaurant. I think that's something that at any of the ML Rose locations, that's something that I would point out as a strong positive.
8th Avenue, West Nashville, Capitol View, Mount Juliet, with more on the way. ML Rose, an awesome place to take your kids or whoever you want to take. Three mailbag questions that we're going to get you out of here. Chris Hull, what kind of midfield identity is this team building? What midfield trio, in your opinion, would best support a turnaround and follow-up? Is Dax available? He's not playing a lot in Atlanta right now. Hopefully, he can get more time. I look at a 4-4-2 right now with Godoy and Yearwood supporting Leal on one flank, Boyd on the other when healthy, Hani and Sam up top, Schaffelberg interchangeable with Leal. So that midfield of Godoy and Yearwood, but with guys who can come back and track back and play some midfield, qualities and roles like Boyd and Leal can do. Unfortunately, Tim, Godoy's my biggest question mark right now. I think there are times when he's been too ponderous on the ball. He can't go the full 90 all season just by virtue of his age and the fact that he's still playing some for Panama as well. He's just not really provided the link to the top, I think, that he used to specialize in providing. He's more of a six than an eight now, I think. And I think that's the place where Nashville can bring in a summer signing, a true two-way player whom you can trust to be a co-number eight with Yearwood and have the vision moving forward, but also the defensive solidity we've seen from Godoy over the years that brings a little more of that solidity, perhaps, than a Sean Davis, a little more of the going forward than a Godoy. I think that's where you can bring in your midfield anchor of the future, whom I don't believe is currently on this team, with all due respect to Yearwood and Davis and what they can provide.
Yeah, I mean, I think the midfield of the future, it revolves around Drew Yearwood for better or for worse, just the way this roster is constructed and the way it's been built. I think that is the case. So I think you look at Yearwood and say, what is best for him? He can play as a shuttler in a diamond midfield. I think what Nashville would be best served by, going back to what has worked since basically the USL days, which is a kind of a bog standard 4-2-3-1. It's the most common formation in this league, although a lot of teams are switching to a 4-3-3 with a pure holder. I think you look at a 4-2-3-1 and you say, okay, we have Yearwood. I think you can plug either Godoy or Sean Davis in there, and Davis can also kind of spell Yearwood a little bit more too. That way you end up with nobody getting too many minutes on their legs over the course of the year. And that allows you to put in that front four, it allows you to put more of your attacking players up there. I think you can get Boyd and Mukhtar next to each other. Obviously, Serge playing up top. And then I think you have a little bit more ability to rotate with that other winger spot, or you can kind of play Hani out there. You can do it more like a 4-2-2-2. It gives you a lot of flexibility in the way you want to play with that front four. So I think that two holding midfielders, also helps you cover for a little bit of Godoy's age too, as he doesn't need to cover as much side to side. I think that's the way to go. And you know, for better or worse, I think the midfield of the future revolves around your Yearwood. So you might as well kind of accept that and build your midfield accordingly.
Build according to the tools maybe he doesn't have and complement. I think that's I think that's good. Logan, do you believe getting Walker Zimmerman back fixes most of our issues at the back, or are the issues more systemic? The question for me, Tim, is who plays on that left side next to him, and can they play better than they've been playing? But I do think it is a huge boost. As we talked about a couple of weeks ago, I think Mayer is a better backup singer than lead singer. And I think with Walker next to him, he can focus on complementing what Walker does well versus having to lead the line himself.
I think that's precisely the right answer. It doesn't matter what the other guy does as much, because Zimmerman can cover a lot of those mistakes, and Zimmerman raises the level of a back line around him. It fixes most of the issues at the back. It is not a panacea that fixes literally everything, but I think you look at it and it takes Nashville from what we have seen so far this year, which has not been great, to a more typical Nashville SC back line.
Will this terrible rash of injury luck mean ultimately when we are healthy, it might be too late to right the ship before season's end, asks Justin. And what realistic goals should this team be striving for? Number one, I think, Tim, avoid the wild card match. Make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be hosting. That's going to be a tall ask at this point. But finishing seventh or better, fifth through seventh, I think is still attainable. For instance, if Nashville hits that 11-point mark we talked about in its next five matches, it's going to have the same points per game as the current seventh place team, Atlanta. So if they do what they're supposed to do here, perform well, they're right back into that conversation. And number two, I think go all in on Leagues Cup at this point. I would have said take a step back from Leagues Cup even 2 weeks ago. But I think, you know, as we look at maybe a potential signing coming in, a longer run allows you a chance to do what you did with Surge last year and incorporate him. The matchups are not unfavorable the way New England's been playing, especially, and the supporters need something to make them happy. Even if you get knocked out in the early knockout round, you still have a chance for some rest too before the league schedule resumes. So avoid that wild card match, go in all in on Leagues Cup. That's what I've got.
I'm the opposite for the second part, at least. I think last year I said, as soon as Nashville got out of the group, I said, emphasize Leagues Cup. This year I'm saying you just don't have the depth because of the way the injury situation has played out. You're going to have guys like Walker Zimmerman who are still playing their way into 90-minute fitness. As soon as he comes back, it's still going to take him, you know, a month to be a 100% Walker Zimmerman for 90 minutes. He'll play 90 minutes, but he's not going to be a scare quotes Walker Zimmerman for those 90 minutes right off the bat. So I think you need to, unfortunately, scrap Leagues Cup at this point and aim for, you know, you want to aim for a home playoff match. I don't think that it's likely that this club gets there, but I think that has to be your goal, especially if you aren't going all in on Leagues Cup.
Embracing debate. All right, quick up and up or down lightning round.
got vicious with each other there.
We sure, you know, watch out. I'm coming for your throat. new league competition rules in place as of last weekend. I want a quick yes or no up or down on these. Off-field treatment rule. If a player with a suspected injury remains on the ground for more than 15 seconds, the referee stops play. If the medical crew comes on, the player will have to remain off the field for a minimum of 2 minutes for assessment and treatment. Up or down?
Up. It's a player safety issue, so good on it.
With a time-wasting chaser, I'm all about that. Mm-hmm. Number two, the time substitution rule. Maximize effective match time. When you're subbed out, you have to get off the field within 10 seconds. Up or down?
Up. Easy. They said 99% of them are already like that.
That's fine. I think it's down because it's kind of dumb because the referee should be better at keeping time and just add that back on. But I don't mind it. I don't hate it. Number three, huge up for me on this one. In-stadium VAR announcements.
Corny, but positive. We'll get used to it.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Transparency, always a good thing. Thanks, everybody, for listening. ML Rose for your burgers. Bearded Iris for your beer. Moon Taxi for your music. 440 Sports Network for all of your great podcasts, and make sure to rate and review, subscribe to this one, tell a friend, and follow us on Twitter. Can't wait to see you guys at the match Saturday and talk to you afterward.
Peace.